Hello.
Please note that the following program includes adult themes and language. You're listening to the weekly show on Discourse.
Oh yeah, I'm back.
Episode 3. Yippee-ki-yay, Mr. Power, with Morgan and Ben.
How are you doing, Ben?
I'm fantastic tonight, Morgan.
I'm fantastic as well. The reason I'm fantastic is we have an action-packed show lined up.
You know, this has made my Labour weekend, because my Labour weekend was spent snorting and coughing and hacking. Probably the best Labour
hacking.
Weekend.
I love hacking all weekend.
Hacking as in coughing. Yeah.
Oh, I don't like that so much.
The best weather on the Labour weekend in living memory, and I spent it inside. So I'm happy to have a rip snorter of a show today. It's excellent.
I'd say I was sympathetic, Ben, but I was in Coromandel the whole weekend. Yeah, I know. It was really good. It was so nice.
So this show's all about the internets.
This show is all about the internets. It's quite a lot of the history of the internets. Mm. We're going to speak with Thomas Scovell, who is the project lead of downtothewire.co.nz.
That's
a site
great
I
site.
Dearly love. We're also going to speak with Rick Scherer. Let's call him a technology lawyer.
Yeah, partner at Lowndes Jordan. Because Simon, yeah, we'll talk about that. But Simon,
we'll talk about that.
Yep.
And all the rest of the cool stuff. We're going to have our word of the week. We're going to have, interesting stories of the week.
Stuff of the week.
And we're going to pack it all in there. And we're going to jump up and down on it.
Yeah.
We're going to squeeze it into a podcast.
And squeeze
we're going to push it
down
the pipes.
Tubes. Yep. Yep. And don't forget, we've got at the end we'll have corrections and feedback.
Oh, we've got so many corrections.
Yeah.
Well, let's get cracking.
Corrections will just grow.
We've got to get cracking because we don't have any time. Let's start with Thomas Scovell.
Discourse.
So there's a cool site that I've been checking out every day lately, actually, Ben, and probably you have as well. Mm. Have you heard of this? Downtothewire.co.nz?
It's actually bloody awesome.
Isn't it incredible?
Best web project I've seen in a long time. Probably best New Zealand development project since, what, Camera Plus, maybe?
Camera Plus was brilliant when you could push the button to activate the shutter. But then for some reason, I tried to buy it for my mum and I couldn't find it in the store.
No.
I don't know why that would be. So anyway, this Down to the Wire is a history of the New Zealand internet from about 1989, I think it was. It's a new year released every day. It started on October the 11th, 11-10-10. Why didn't they do it on 10-10-10, I ask you?
We'll find
but
out.
But instead of asking you, how about we ask project lead and digital strategist, it's Thomas Scovell from heyday.co.nz.
Hi, guys. Why 11-10-10? I mean, that is a good question. And actually, originally when we conceived the project, we did have all of these really interesting binary dates we're going to take advantage of. And yeah, they sort of worked out. They sort of didn't. I think there's an old adage in web design, which is never release on a Friday. And I think next is never release on a Sunday. So we went for Monday, which was the 11th.
I quite like, with my personal projects, never release.
On Sunday morning at about sort of 4 a.m., actually it felt like we never would release, but we eventually got over that, and I think it was 4:30 we did release.
Wow.
So that was tight. Was that just getting the content ready for the first day, or was that, I mean, how many days in advance did you have prepared?
That was both content and the sort of the development / design of the site. I mean, being an internal project at Heyday, we obviously had to do paid work the same time, so there was a lot of late nights and a couple of weeks beforehand, so yeah, there were a few humps to get over and a few last minute pieces of art direction from those in charge that meant, you know, features had to be there, but you know, eventually we did.
Right, and, so you call it an internal project, but I've heard from a reliable source that this is actually a telecom funded marketing stunt.
I've actually heard just that same thing, and we were hoping maybe it was, and they just hadn't sent us the check yet.
It's in the mail.
But yeah, hopefully, who knows. But there were actually a few rumours. Just the first couple of days after we launched, people were saying, oh, look, this is some underground telecom marketing stunt. It's all going to be revealed in 21 days. But I think, and as people have sort of followed the content along, they've realised that we haven't exactly been that friendly to telecom, which you can't be when you're talking about the history of the internet in New Zealand. So, clearly not a telecom marketing stunt.
So if not, where did the idea come from? Who actually thought of the concept and why now? And you know, how did you make it happen?
Yeah, I mean, sure. It is a marketing stunt to a degree. But it's a marketing stunt for Heyday, who are a digital agency from Wellington that I work for, formerly known as DoubleClick. And basically, this year is the agency's 10th birthday. So we decided to do something kind of cool for the 10th birthday, sort of give back to the community and sort of the technology that's sort of helped us become the company we are. So, yeah, I think the guys over a few beers basically came up with the idea of both the numbers and the fact that it was the 21st anniversary of the Internet in New Zealand, and thought, hey, let's do something with that.
Let's do a yard.
So 21 years, 21 days. When does it finish up?
It finishes, I think, on...
I can't do maths.
This Sunday, which is the 31st.
The 31st of October.
It finishes on a Sunday, but it couldn't start on a Sunday.
Yeah.
Well, you should have waited until next year, then
it
never finished on Monday.
It only occurred to me on Friday of the first week that we were working over the weekend to get it done. It hadn't actually occurred to me until that point that I realised that actually 21 days was 21 days without a break. So, yeah.
Now, I think that the listeners should probably, like, pause the podcast. They're probably on the bus. They're probably driving in their car. Yep. So get out your iPad and put it on the steering wheel on the motorway, at motorway speeds. I'm speaking as your lawyer. I'm telling you that you're legally allowed to do this. And bring up the site. And just never mind even reading the content. Just scroll up and down.
Yeah.
And just enjoy the way the columns scroll. Because it is really, it's horny.
Yeah, we actually got that, the name for that, we're calling it geared scrolling, which actually came from someone who was just tweeting about how cool they thought it was. We didn't actually have a name for it. It just came up over a whiteboarding session that we thought, hey, that'd be cool. And it was definitely one of the things that kept us going till 4:30 in the morning to get it right. It does unfortunately only work on WebKit browsers.
Right, so, well, everyone should use Chrome.
IE browsers, you're out of luck for now.
Chrome is where it's at anyway.
Yeah, definitely. And look, we've also open sourced that, so you'll probably be seeing it on every other website soon. So it'll be pretty played out. Lovely. But if someone out there does want to get it working on IE, go grab the code. It's linked off the site. Make it work in IE and give it back to us. Then everybody can enjoy it.
What is this? Someone I heard say something about open source. Yes, why would I bother doing that when it's an open source project and someone else can do it for me?
That's what we're kind of hoping. The same thing with the content. The content is all Creative Commons. So if anyone's got any problems with the accuracy or just wants to see different stuff in there, just go put it on another site. That'd be great.
There's a lot of content in there. Like, I don't know. I mean, tons of content. 21 days. I mean, what, there's 3 or 4 videos on every day, is there?
Yeah, there is, and I mean, there could, to be honest, be a lot more. That's about as much as we've managed to get through. We interviewed about 65 different people over a sort of 3-week span the end of last month, and we were sort of thinking, well, we invited 100 people. We thought, say, 20% of those will get back to us, and then we'll get maybe, one good little snippet from each of them. But it turned out that about 70-80% of people said, yay, this is cool, we want to be involved. And then when we got to talk to people, we were thinking, again, one question, but it turned out that we basically got 20-30 minutes with most people. So we've really only been able to use a fraction of that. But
the elephant in the room over here is that technology commentator and prolific internet blogster, and now New Zealand's next co-top podcaster, Benedict Gracewood, was invited by whoever your PR company is, and not realizing what the project was, he said no.
I'm ashamed. I said no. It was one of my very, very busy times, but
we were a little bit disappointed, Ben, but that's all good. And one of the good things about the project, to be honest, is, and we did expect that, I was actually relatively pleased with the people who came back and said, hey, yeah, we want to be involved, not really knowing any idea who we were or what we were actually doing. But now that people have seen it, we have had a lot more people come to us and say, hey, we want to be involved. And the actual point is that it's not a static thing. This 21 days is just the launch, so we're hoping to definitely go back and flesh out some of the text with more videos and sort of more stuff.
I was going to ask that. I mean, yeah, is it going to go out with a bang? Is it actually just one giant sort of DDoS attack that's going to be launched on the 31st or something like that?
No, I mean, to be perfectly honest, and again, it's only sort of 3 days now of the work week left, but we don't actually know what we're doing for 2010 yet. So 2010 would be the Monday entry. We don't know what we're doing with that, but it will be something relatively exciting, but probably collaborative.
I know what it is.
So there will definitely be some more content that will be trying to get people involved with helping
something
us create.
Something extremely exciting happened this year, the launch of New Zealand's best podcast, discourse.co.nz. Pride of place on the site, I predict.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Most definitely. I'm sure you'll be there.
So all that archive footage you've got, are you going to sort of give access to that, or is it a bit irrelevant? Or
post up the unedited things?
Yeah, the way we filmed them, I don't think it'd be that flattering for either the people involved or us if we just gave sort of the raw 30-minute interviews. Because we told people at the outset we were just looking for, you know, single answers and how we were going to use them. Mm. So there's a lot of fluff in between them. What we will do is over the next sort of couple of months go back and grab more of the best answers, put some of them on the site, and because the Creative Commons, we're hopefully going to get them archived somewhere that people can actually download them and use them as well, not just YouTube.
Cool.
If you think that's not flattering, you should see what the Discourse podcast is like before the Chinese government gets its hands on it. So you got heaps of material. Is there anything that you really wanted to post out of the stuff that you got, but that you just couldn't post?
There were a few things that people said that they asked us afterwards, to put off the record.
Was it stuff about...
A few stories about the way certain companies were funded early on, or just some personalities within those companies that we were told not to mention.
I could tell you some shit about.
Now, wasn't that the free? What was the free one? The free internet one that was funded by
I4Free?
Yeah, that was funded by termination fees.
Yeah,
that was probably what you're talking about. But maybe we can't
I think yes, the sort of 96-97 era ISPs had some interesting stories.
Yeah, that's when I was at ISPs. I was at iHug from. Early 96.
We don't want to get done for libel and defamation.
I'll beep the interesting stuff. For example, there was there was some sordid shit going on there. It was just and basically you'd get nerds all close together. And the thing was, like, once we found a like, and by we I mean they just.
No.
Yes. Yes. I'm going to cut all this out, so don't worry. But
and what about a golden moment or something that really stood out that you weren't expecting?
I mean, I think one of the great sessions we had was with a bunch of guys from the old days. There was John Hawker, John Hine, people that were at Waikato University, at Vic University, most of them still are actually. Mm. And we got them all together in a room, six of them, and did a sort of a rather lengthy session with them and got them to reminisce. I think John Hawker, who was literally the guy who plugged in the internet in 1989.
It's amazing, isn't it?
And he said to us that, well, TV did something with him last year, but it was just, I think they did a half-hour interview, but it got cut down to about 5 seconds or something. Right. And he was rather disappointed with the lack of attention given to the story. So he wanted to know that we were going to do it justice. So he thought, okay, look, we'll do this, we'll do it as a group session. And it did end up being sort of, I think it took us about 3.5 hours to do. And there's some great material from that. That's one of the things we definitely want to go back and get more material from. And those guys did really have some great stories. And it was just great hearing about why they were inspired to actually get the internet here and the struggles they went through and some of the sort of wheeling and dealing that went on. You realize it was all worthwhile.
Was that John Hine of the Hine Report who basically into how the domain name commission and things should be structured?
This is the internet NZ report,
yes,
yeah?
Yes, I believe so.
So he's the guy that one of the lead guys on the report that basically turned domains and ISOC NZ into internet, what we now know as internet NZ, and it created the BNC and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, that's right, exactly. Right. And I mean, it was interesting. One of the good stories I think that we used on one of the earlier chapters was from John Hawke talking about charging for traffic over the pipe and how actually no one did that. In fact, no one thought you could even measure internet traffic in that way at the time.
Wow.
And they sort of said to him, A, that's just stupid because that's not how the internet works. You're not meant to that. And B, you technically can't do that. But he went out and proved that you technically could do it.
Oh, so he's the motherfucker that...
And basically he's the guy, and it's really interesting talking with him about that decision. And one of his stories that he tells really well is the fact that, well, look, if it wasn't for that, then New Zealand really couldn't afford to keep its link going. And he talks about when some guys came from Australia early on, and they came over and said, look, what sort of stuff are you doing with the internet? And they said, oh, we use this application, that application. And the Australians were like, don't be ridiculous, those applications don't work, the internet's too slow, and there's too much latency for that kind of application. And they showed them the applications working, they were like, oh wow, and they realized it was because our internet links weren't totally saturated because we were charging too much for them.
That is interesting. I mean, it's the perennial issue that's going on. I mean, going on to this day is how do you get people using the internet for what its potential is whilst still charging them a profitable rate, I guess.
Yeah, totally. And look, and I think the story of that the day it's on is it's called The Poison from New Zealand, because evidently after we did it, Chile tried it sort of a year later or something to charge for traffic. Mm. And there were some posts on the I think, the Internet Task Force mailing list talking about the poison from New Zealand spreading.
Wow.
So we were infamous quite early for our charging model. But in the end, I mean, it's one obviously a lot of people have moved to, and it probably did, certainly at the time, help pay for the link. If we didn't have it, you know, it never would have taken off in the way it did.
I mean, there is a debate at the moment about, you know, whether we should be removing or reducing charges for national traffic and still charging for the link and trying to get more local, locally sourced and locally produced facilities and material online. I mean, you probably have an opinion on that, being a, you know, an internet company yourselves. But.
Oh, totally. I mean, look, I mean, that's one of the things is that we obviously are using YouTube to host all the video, which we're a little bit reluctant about, to be honest, but it's just a way of getting the best performance.
Yep.
For, well, low cost, which equals no cost to do the project. But it'd be great if, you know, we could do that locally, if it was cached locally at least, so that people could, you know, get it at speed and certainly not have to worry about their bandwidth. Yeah. I mean, I know some of the ISPs and Orcon are doing, you know, sort of a free rating of content like NZ on screen, which is really cool. So there are some ISPs doing some of that, which is awesome.
That's the Ozone. Go to Orcon.co.nz. This has not been a paid announcement.
No, but I must say, we did interview someone from Orcon, and but we did also interview someone else from NZ on screen, Brenda over there, and they, you know, have been really helpful, both in terms of just talking about what they're up to, supporting the project. Also, one of the other things we haven't mentioned is the free audio we've got from Flying Nun.
Oh, right.
And so we've been releasing a song a day from Flying Nun's back catalogue, which has been a song from that particular year. So the idea was to sort of get people in the mood for that year and just sort of give something, you know, a different form of media.
Yeah, and there's so much good stuff there. Today's song, well, when we're recording this, I don't know what it's going to be on Thursday when this comes out, is Heavenly Pop Hit by The Chills, which just
seminal.
Glorious. Wait, yeah, wait a minute.
Song, and they've been great.
Sound like
they've
John
made
Campbell.
It free. Unfortunately, the free downloads of the music do end at the end of the month, so if you want them, then you should go get them now.
Grab them. Okay. Get in there. Fill your boots up. Wow, at the end of the month. So, I mean, really just a few days from now. So is it 1 month after the posting of it, or 1 month for all of them?
Well, no, it was basically for the span of the 21 days.
Right.
We might have a chat with them about that, depending on the popularity. We haven't looked deeply into the stats, the popularity of the music. So if they are popular enough and the band's agree, we might see about extending that.
Are you, is Heyday paying for that, or is Flying Nun?
That's just a sponsorship deal. So there's been no money has exchanged hands for those. Yeah.
Oh, very cool.
So what now, is there a funding model? Has Heyday just covered it all internally, or have you
totally funded out of our pockets. So like I say, most of the work's been done out of ours, so the cost is,
I mean, it's a PR exercise for you, so you know, it's
a PR exercise, but I mean, look at that material, it must have cost a bomb to put it together.
I mean obviously there have been some costs, you know, some of the gear we had to hire, a lot of the gear we had. If you look at, quite pleased with the quality of a lot of the interviews. We've had some great people that look great on camera. But, you know, one of the things that certainly helped is filming on a Canon 7D, which has just, you know, in some of the locations we've used, it's just looked really nice, rather than using a traditional camera.
I was a little bit afraid to ask because it might get a little bit nerdy, and I do want to keep this as a comedy podcast, not a tech podcast, but
right.
I actually shot a short film using a 7D earlier this year. It's a lovely camera.
Mm.
Wonderful camera.
It's amazing.
It was a great talking point as well. We actually found, I think, it put people at ease. People were expecting us to turn up with a large on-shoulder sort of TV camera, and when we just popped out the 7D with a sort of a fairly quirky-looking stand that we had it on, people were sort of instantly a little bit more relaxed, and we sort of got to talk about that, and people got into the groove and then sort of basically forgot about it as we started filming, so it was great.
That's good. Now, this is definitely inside baseball, but one thing that bothers me for documentary use on the 7D is the 12-minute maximum recording time. Was that a problem at all?
It was a problem a couple of times. It was definitely a problem with the 3.5-hour interview we did with John Hawker-Hind, et cetera. For that, we had two of them. We had an external sound deck.
Right.
It came up a couple of times. There were some people who, you know, when you asked them one question, they would give you the answer to about six questions. All of which were awesome, but you didn't want to stop them when they're on a roll. So a couple of times we missed a couple of bits, but we just went back and retook it, or
So were there any? That's like a little problem. Were there any massive disasters? I mean, traveling around so much, talking to so many people.
We did. We lost one interview because of audio issues, actually, so not the camera, so the external audio. But we were able to use on-camera audio to fix that up.
Right.
That's a horrible AGC on it.
Yeah.
So having done all this, Yeah, I mean, even if you weren't involved in the interviews and this sort of stuff, having looked through the content of the interviews and stuff, how do you feel about the way the internet's going in New Zealand and the future of it? I mean, with things, like you say, about charging models, you know, free access to things on different ISPs, yeah, the consolidation of ISPs into larger ones, do you think it's all going to be good?
Oh, look, I totally do. And one of the interesting things is when we originally conceived the project, it was going to be 31 days long. It ended up being 21 days long, so we ended up concentrating on the past. We were going to do another 10 days concentrating on what people thought about the future. And actually, I did the interviews with people, and so I did ask a lot of questions about what people thought the future was going to be like. I asked people, you know, in different professions and in different areas of the web about where they thought things were going. And there was a lot of positivity out there, which I think was really great. To be honest, I went in a little bit cynical, just concerned that, you know, people would sort of be remembering the good old days, but, right, you know, being a little bit beaten down now. But everyone was sort of, A, really happy to reminisce, and B, really excited for the future. I was also expecting a lot of telecom bashing, and whilst, obviously, we're not sponsored by telecom, and there was a little bit of telecom bashing, but I think people have got it out of their system by now. We've made a few jokes at their expense. I think probably, hopefully, just the right number. If anyone's got any more telecom jokes, they shouldn't send them in. But, you know, I think people are just, you know, really excited about the future now. And, you know, there were the odd, you know, complaints, we need more bandwidth, the cliched things. Mm. But there was a lot of, you know, getting on with things and real excitement.
Yeah, I mean, impressive project. I just want to say congrats. You know, it's really quite stunning.
Absolutely stunning is the word.
Are you pleased with how it's gone down?
Yeah, I am. And I'm really pleased with the reaction. In general, people have, you know, people have said very nice things. I'd like to see a bit more, on the contribution side. We've had some good, you know, regular contributors. I've had a lot of back channel sort of suggestions of things to add, where people have said, you know, hey, you should mention this, and along the way we've mentioned it. People have been sort of telling us, oh, you know, coming up in 2004 you should mention this. But I mean, also, you know, this thing is sort of, it really only starts at the end of the 21 days. That's when, sort of, you know, to a degree, we've got that first draft done. You know, it's going to stay up for, you know, years to come. We'll add to it year by year, hopefully. And if people, you know, recall things along the way that they think we should add, or we come across someone who can tell a great story from 1998 again, we'll go back and add that to it.
I can tell you some stories from 1998. getting a in his office from a member of staff.
That needs a bleep.
Yep, bleep.
You wouldn't be the first person with salacious stories about him, that's, yeah.
Oh, boy. I had some really good nights out with actually, but that stuff is never going to go into any official history.
The thing now, or something I saw in a...
What, yeah, because I don't know what done.
Well, no, there was in a magazine, there's basically...
Right.
Yeah, interesting.
Hmm. Man, the bleeping is going to be incredible on this.
How do we want to close this out?
Well, Thomas, it's really been it's been great having you on. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for being our first genuine guest appearance.
And such a pro.
As opposed to a correspondent. Yeah, thank you very much.
And really hopefully we can get you on another time when you have your next mind-blowing project.
That's great.
All right?
Cheers.
Cool. Cheers, Thomas.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Have a good night.
Discourse. Yeah, so it was great speaking with Thomas.
Thomas was our first real official kind of authoritative guest.
That's true.
Because our correspondent,
our first proper guest.
Yeah. Thomas was on for a specific
Thomas reason. Was an actual guest. I hope we can get him back again. He's good on the show.
Great. And then in the same vein of internet history and the way we need to be treating our internets, attending them, we're going to talk to Rick about some recent changes and attempted changes to cyber law.
Discourse. In the following interview that we conduct with Rick Scherer, ICT law partner at Lowndes Jordan, Rick lives, I don't know, somewhere
in space,
on the outskirts of Auckland, out in rural.
Does he?
Ruralonia, in deepest, darkest Albania or somewhere.
He might just be on the shore, actually.
Might be on the shore. But wherever he is, he's got a lot of interference on his microphone.
Fantastic interview. Poor sound quality. So you might have to just bear with us.
Discord.
I saw in the paper the other day that the communications minister, I think Simon Power, is asking for a review of the law as it relates to new media, because he said, what did he say, that there was a wild west in cyberspace. Bloggers and online publishers are not subject to any form of regulation or professional or ethical standards, which I think is completely incorrect.
It sounds incorrect to me.
So we've got on the line Rick Scherer, partner with Lowndes Jordan, who specialises in ICT law, and we'd like to have a chat to you, Rick, about those statements and what your thoughts are on them. So welcome.
Yes,
Thank you, guys, for joining us on the show.
So Rick, I mean, to the best of your knowledge, are there any laws that specifically exclude new media and the internet from their enforcement? I mean, I thought they just covered everything.
No, most of the laws do apply equally to the internet as to anywhere else. It's interesting that this discussion pops up. I can remember, well, probably at least 10 years ago, going to a meeting of internet aficionados in a room where this debate was taking place at the time. And
right.
There were a few people back then who even then clung to the view that perhaps laws didn't apply to the internet, but they were generally shouted down, and most people concluded even 10 years ago that all of the laws that we have apply equally online.
Well, I remember running web hosting at iHug and dealing with the DIA about the Films, Videos and Publications Classification Act in like 1996, 1997. They didn't seem to have any trouble making it apply to the web.
No, and, you know, there are all sorts of laws that apply online. You know, you're talking about objectionable material that DIA enforces and has been for some time.
Yeah.
There's copyright law, which we've all lived and breathed for the last few years around the debacle that became Section 92A. There's defamation online. Name suppression, of course. We just had Cameron Slater and his little foray.
Yeah.
And all sorts of other laws. So the idea that the internet is a wild west without law and people just doing as they please really is it's a real extrapolation that isn't really justified. Yes. It reminds me a little bit actually of Trevor Rogers, who was a minister in a previous national government, who came out with a bill which again was a little bit of a knee-jerk, and I'm always sceptical of these sorts of reactions, particularly around the Cameron Slater episode, which does seem to have prompted this.
Yeah, it does. So, I mean, is that around his attempts to allow, I mean, you know, to basically intentionally publish suppressed names online? Is he saying that he should be allowed to, or that the law doesn't disallow it, therefore the law is an ass and needs to be corrected? Do you know?
Well, I think what he was saying was he was taking a philosophical position and trying to say, well, I don't agree with the way in which name suppression laws are being exercised in New Zealand. I will use the internet as my means of getting up on a soapbox and telling as many people as possible. So I don't think, well, it certainly didn't come as a surprise to me and to many others to find that he was found guilty by Judge David Harvey. And meanwhile, Cameron Slater is appealing, so it'll be interesting to see where that gets to.
Do you know what grounds he's appealing on? I mean, is it to do with printed works and things?
His lawyer is doing a wonderful job of trying to manufacture as many possible defences as possible. And some of them are somewhat gymnastic.
Right.
You know, the idea that simply because Mr. Slater obscured the names by using pictograms, and therefore that is not a publication, seems to me to be somewhat of a stretch. The interesting one, I think, in that, though, will be an argument around jurisdiction. The argument that the server on which the Whale Oil blog is published is based in the US.
Yeah, that's
that,
a really
interesting
one
of the issues that Mr. Power and anyone else who's going to have to deal or trying to impose regulation on the internet is going to have to try and work out. Jurisdictional boundaries don't really work with the internet.
No, absolutely. That is a really, really interesting issue. And, I mean, you've got, Turkey banning all of Facebook because of one site that breaks a law that they have. I mean, the law may be stupid as well. It's a you know non-political speech type law, it sounds like. But even so, you know, they're saying the jurisdiction is, you know, irrelevant, and also the entire site can be blocked, which is over the top.
Yeah, that's right. And I mean, the internet was designed technically as a means by which people could route around barriers and blockages and so on. So to suggest that it's not going to, and people using it are not going to route around blockages in the form of regulation is a little bit naive, I think.
Well, I know how we
could
solve it.
It's not to say that we shouldn't have regulation, but I think that people who think that they're going to impose some sort of one-size-fits-all on the internet really are pushing it.
Well, no, what we can do is we could have you know, a department, perhaps maybe the Internal Affairs Department, with a list, you know, they could use as a filter, and everyone could go through them, and they could block it.
A filter they've already created.
Filter well, they already do have a filter.
So you're saying there is a filter in place?
Yeah, so there is a filter that DIA has in place with ISPs.
Is that being used in production now, or is it? I thought it was in a test mode.
I thought Vodafone was using it in production.
No, it actually is in production. It's okay. The reason why it's in production, and the reason why it's been a little bit under the radar, is that DIA's position was that it didn't need a change to the law in order to bring the filter into play.
Yeah.
So certain ISPs are volunteering. In fact, probably most of them are volunteering, I suspect.
Right. So things are being filtered and we just don't know it.
Yeah, we don't know what's being filtered. The understanding is that it's a pretty narrow sort of a filter.
Mm.
But filters, to my mind, yes, they can have a part to play, but the general proposition, as I said before about the internet, is that it will just route around
whatever
blockages are put in place. So the filters tend to be somewhat ineffective.
Yeah, especially for people who are wanting.
The real danger with them, of course, is what happens after they're put in place.
Mm.
So you have scope creep and the sorts of things that arose in Australia when they were trying to put their filter in place, where you had butchers and dentists and people turning up on their filter for some unknown reason.
Yeah, do you know, if the DIA doesn't need a rule change to put the filter in place, do they need a rule change to then add suppressed names, websites to suppress names to that filter, or is that definitely out of scope for it?
Do you have any idea? Well, it would have to be, DIA operates in the monitoring of objectionable material under the Films, Videos, Publications and Classification
Act. Okay, right. So
it would only be in respect of that. They wouldn't be putting anything else in. But that's not to say, of course, that someone like Simon Power, who does seem to want to take very quick and decisive action whenever he sees a problem on the internet, wouldn't push for some other form of monitoring or interference with what you might say is, in the wider sense, freedom of speech, where he saw a need. And, you know, there have been law changes in recent times that we can point to, not just on the internet, but in all sorts of respects, where certainly the Law Society has submitted against them, but that hasn't really helped in terms of changes coming into play very quickly.
That's interesting. So, I mean, is there anything that we or listeners as internet users can do to sort of perhaps lend weight to this? Perhaps, you know...
I think as internet users, we need to be vigilant to make sure that the freedoms of speech that we do have are preserved. And I'm not suggesting for a moment that any minister or indeed anyone else really wants to shut down freedom of speech.
No.
But the difficulty with the internet is that trying to put in place regulation over something which is inherently unregulable, that's a word,
I understand, yes.
Can be very difficult, and you have very unforeseen consequences, as we've seen with the copyright and so on. So
yes,
it does pay to spend a good deal of time looking at things and trying to work out what's going to happen. Yeah. And that's why, at the very least, Simon Power's suggestion for the matter to be referred to the Law Commission is a good idea, so at least we'll have a year or so or more to debate over this.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I mean, to my mind, the fact that just the very fact that Cameron Slater has been prosecuted and found guilty, and you know, there's been child porn prosecutions and you know, commercial copyright prosecutions, the law is working. And you know, especially in the copyright vein, you can cynically say that the only reason there's change going on is because of the change in business model, as opposed to any sort of risk.
How many more cases do we want to see before the courts? Do we want them filled up like they are in some jurisdictions in the States with copyright complaints and so on?
That's right. And the suggestion, if I read what Minister Power is suggesting, is that in some way there will be some sort of Uber regulator of the internet, so that not only what people call the mainstream media, it's not you or I sitting here talking to a podcast,
right?
But the mainstream
TVNZ,
old media,
NZLs,
newspapers and so on, will have the same sort of regulation that is applied to them will somehow be applied to bloggers and...
Because there's a comment talking about a broadcasting standards type body for the internet.
Yeah, broadcasting standards or the Press Council has been mentioned as well. Okay. I mean, the difficulty with that is, well, what's a blog? Yeah. And is Trade Me Forums, is that a blog?
Yep.
Is Twitter, that's a blog, presumably.
I mean, how will that...
on earth is someone going to regulate that?
Yeah, and in terms of, the chilling effect as well, I mean, some of those comment forums are... there is blatant libel and defamation going on them.
Certainly
on
Trade
a daily
Me.
Basis.
Certainly Kiwi Blog.
Yeah.
Kiwi Blog, who outed... like on the day that was still suppressed. I think it's still suppressed, so I'll bleep that. Yeah. Don't be afraid.
But I mean, also the comments in those, and the vitriol that goes on in the comments. I mean, I don't know my law, but surely these things go over the line. But the thing is, to me, it's still an element of healthy debate that doesn't help happen in other places in society. So it is an interesting concept that you'd regulate that down to the level of a mainstream media as well. It's cutting off a bit of a lifeline that we have at the moment. I mean.
Yeah, and it would be difficult, and it's very difficult to lay a one-size-fits-all rule over the likes of a satirical parody-type blog compared to a public address-type fairly mainstream blogging, or even Kiwi Blog, for that matter.
Yeah,
but of course, public address has multiple authors, and some of them are quite satirical.
And of course, once you're in this space, the suggestion is from Mr. Power is that for name suppression, for example, the host or the ISP will be liable if they don't take the name suppressed material down.
Oh, right.
How on earth that's going to work, I don't know.
But no.
I mean, for a little blog, for example, my blog, if someone makes a comment on it, well, I might not see it for a couple of days.
No.
What is your blog?
LawGeekNZ.
.postgres.com, isn't it? Yes. So you're LawGeekNZ on Twitter and LawGeekNZ.postgres.com.
That's right.
I mean, thanks very much for talking to us. There's obviously no real simple answers to any of this, but...
Never is.
I've got a simple answer.
Interesting.
Yeah. Treat the internet exactly the same way you treat all other forms of media and expression.
Absolutely. I mean, the laws absolutely apply to the internet just like they do anywhere else. The only difficulty is with someone enforcing it. Well, if you do something...
That's always difficult, isn't it?
...egregious enough, then someone's going to take action.
Yeah. Yep, absolutely. Yeah. And that's why you get Cameron Slater in court, because he's... He pokes the borax.
That's right. And that was, as I said, it wasn't any surprise to many people that he was pinged for it.
Right.
He's appealing, which is his right, and that'll be interesting.
Oh no!
To
I assure you, he is entirely unappealing.
he's appealing the conviction. I've lost what I was
going to
say.
Now, there's an interesting question about jurisdiction. So, I mean, we know that people can publish about material suppressed in New Zealand. So, the New York Post or the Times or whoever. Can publish about that. So we had, whoever that billionaire was on marijuana charges, who we possibly still can't talk about, they can legally post about. So then you get a site like Whale Oil.
Or Scoop, who aggregates AP news and that sort of
not,
stuff.
Not so much Scoop, but if you look at Whale Oil, who is hosted in the States. Now, he's in New Zealand, so I say New Zealand law applies to him. But his commenters commenting on his blog from the States on a US-hosted site. So, I mean, how does the law apply to comments on his site? So then his material that he posts would be treated differently from material on the same page posted by other users.
Yes, well, I guess it would come down to who the publisher of that material is. And generally, the owner or the editor of the blog tends to be classed as the publisher rather than people making comments themselves. Although, there have been cases where comment publishers, people who have put comments on, have been sued for defamation, not here in New Zealand, but overseas.
I mean, that's why New Zealand Herald, very quickly after they turned on their comments, they changed it to registration required as opposed to anonymous.
And that's still horrible.
Yeah.
That's right. I mean, it gives them some degree of scrutiny over what's happening on it.
That, to me, is
one of the big problems of this, is that if you're going to class ISPs and the ISP or a hoster of material as potentially criminally liable for suppressed material, if they don't take it down when they know about it. First of all, how are they going to know about it? So we must presumably have a centralized register of suppression orders, which means that every man, dog, and child have got to have access to it. So immediately you start getting into these sorts of issues, it gets very, very complicated.
Well, very much so. So I guess we'll keep an eye. So you're saying that it is being passed to the Law Commission and they will take their time. Is there any deadline on that, do you know?
Yeah, by December 2011, I think, is they're due to report back.
Okay.
It's not just about name suppression. It's a very wide, notwithstanding Simon Power said it was quite narrow, when you read what the reference is, it's quite wide. It's talking about should we have better laws to do with defamation or harassment or privacy, as well as name suppression on the internet? Okay. So that's a huge area.
What does better mean?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. Better in whose eyes?
Yes.
Does it mean better stronger?
Better it would seem from Simon Power's point of view is that there are nasty things on the internet and we need to do something about it.
Yeah. Oh, he's old.
Yeah.
Protect me, please.
Protect us.
Yeah, and as I say, Trevor Rogers, that would be well over 10, 15 years ago, came out with a bill, along these sorts of lines. Mm. If there's pornography on the internet, we need to do something about it. Cut them off.
Right. I mean, there's been, like you say, there's been a series of these as well through that and 92A and other bits and pieces, to sort of trying to apply different rules to the internet.
Yes, that's right. So, I guess so. Some of them have been reasonably successful, others not. For example, the Spam Act, the Unsolicited Commercial Messages Act. Yes. A lot of people would say, well, what a waste of time. Most of the spam in New Zealand comes from overseas. But it has actually been useful in stopping some of the people in New Zealand who were known to be pretty virulent spammers.
So I've submitted a couple of spams to that, and I've had action. I've had, in one case, I think someone got a warning. Hmm. And in another, I was called. I was actually phoned by them. Believe it or not.
Gosh.
And I think in that case...
Yeah, I think, like many laws, they set what, I guess, society in the widest sense sees as the parameters of good behaviour.
Right. I mean, that's even if it comes down to, mandating or requiring some sort of report this post button or report this comment button, that could be a start.
Do people need to behave well? Mm. Why is that a requirement?
Well, you need to obey the law as a requirement.
Well, there's the law, and then there's being polite. They're not necessarily the same thing.
No,
are
need
they?
To be polite at all, but you can't.
You have to be able to expect some jostling when you walk on Queen Street, right? It's not assault to be jostled. So,
well, that's right. When I say the law is setting parameters as to good behaviour, I mean the outer parameters. Within those parameters, jostling is great.
Yeah. I like a good jostle.
Yes.
Do you have anything to say about Actor?
It's a very, very wide question.
I mean, yeah, it is. It is incredibly wide.
I guess to put it at its least pejorative, Actor is a response to the issue of jurisdiction and the problems that jurisdictional boundaries create. Mm. What they were trying to do was to come up with what the rights holders and government supporters for that position saw as a best practice for copyright enforcement. Mm. Because it was driven by a certain agenda, it went off in a direction which most people would say is not the best way of dealing with it, i.e. Yeah. cutting people off the internet.
You're using the past tense there. I think you're belying your belief, but yeah. It does seem to be dying a horrible death. I mean, the last I heard was the comment that, someone from the US says, well, we don't actually have to enforce any of these things in this.
Well, what's the point
in this agreement?
It seems expensive if we don't have to do it.
Well, I think the point of it is that the parties who are signing up to it all probably already comply with the rules that ACTA now has, as watered down as they have been. And so you'll see it rolled out around the world to countries that don't have that sort of Digital Millennium Copyright Act, notice and takedown style regime.
Yeah. Which is also a disaster.
Yes.
No, yes.
Killing
and which we already have, of course.
Thank you very much for your time. We're going to leave it there, Morgan. I mean, I don't want to keep the man around too long.
No, it's getting late. I'm sure Rick has to be very sharp for his clients tomorrow.
But I mean, hugely appreciate your input, and it is a very, very important thing. And like I asked earlier, I mean, I guess we track the progress of the Law Commission report. I guess people can get involved. I imagine organisations like Internet NZ will be making submissions.
Yes, that's right. And one good thing about the way laws in New Zealand are now being developed is that there does tend to be a good deal of consultation around them. Whether that consultation actually has any impact is another question, but at least you can have your say.
Yeah, so encourage people, if they're concerned about this, to get involved.
Yeah.
Maybe Internet NZ is a good avenue, or even lobbying the...
All right. We'll put some links to Internet NZ and to your blog and various other things into the show notes. It's been really great having you on the show, Rick. Thank you for joining us.
No problem.
Cheers.
Discourse. And we apologise once again for the quality of the sound there. We tried to clean it up.
What you hear is what you're going
to
get.
We'd rather let you guys listen to that than cut it out, because it was just good stuff.
Such good stuff. Such an expert. It's nice to have someone on the show who, unlike Morgan, actually has the first clue of what he's talking about.
That's what he's talking about. So what happened this week? What else happened this week?
Fishing.
Fishing?
Yeah. NZTA fish.
With a PH?
Yeah, fishing with a PH. Did you see this?
Fishing. No. I saw it mentioned, NZTA. So the NZ Transport Authority?
Yeah, that's right. And the fish tried to get, you know, as all of the fisher, what do we call them? The scammers. The
fishermen.
The scumbags, the criminals.
Yeah.
The diggers.
Do you have this where things go past your Twitter stream or your reader and you see them and you think that's an interesting story but you never get a chance to read them?
I do, and so then I still don't read them, but I still talk about them on the podcast.
No, but I saw NZTA and fishing mentioned, but that's all I know. That's how bad I am.
Yeah, well, I've actually received a couple of these.
Really?
I saved them up. There it is.
Wow.
See that? And Google grabbed it and said, hell no, you're not seeing this. This is obviously a phishing message.
What were they trying to fish off you?
Well, I'm not actually going to click the link, but judging by what NZTA's response is, as we can see on stuff.co.nz, you'll see a link in the show notes. The show notes. Oh, my
we'll
God.
We'll talk about those.
Those
good
show
God.
Notes, eh? OCD. Somebody stop me. Good Lord. It took longer to compile those show notes.
I was so impressed. I felt so bad because I didn't do anything. And then there was this 3-page long show note epic.
I've got to contribute something to the show, Ben. So the transport agency is offering to waive the usual fees for changing a driver's license, because some people provided driver's license numbers. They also provided credit card numbers and so on. The regular fish stuff, but then extra stuff as well on top of it. Yeah, nice. So I guess we probably call this a spearfish. Yeah, no, that's the more targeted one, right?
Really?
Yeah, I think it's called a spearfish.
Right.
Oh, maybe a spearfish is when you actually know specifically who you're talking to. So it's like a specific company.
Right,
so, that might be a spearfish.
Right.
So let's call this not so much a drift net as a as like a white bait net.
That
does that make any sense?
Well, do you think it was perpetrated by Kiwis because it's so specifically Kiwi? I mean, surely it wouldn't be some Russians, would it?
Chinese, New Zealanders. What's the difference when it comes right down to it?
No, I mean, they're obviously all real New Zealanders, but in terms of... who would even know that NZTA existed apart from a New Zealander?
That's an interesting question. Even as a New Zealander, it wouldn't even be on my radar.
Maybe you can outsource this stuff.
Well, we've outsourced our scumbag criminals.
Really?
Well, I mean, I'm still presuming that they are coming from offshore.
Right, okay.
So let's outsource the NZTA as well. What could possibly go wrong?
Do you know who else is outsourcing? BP.
What are they outsourcing?
BP or outsourcing climate denial, climate change denial.
Oh, wee! Wow, wait a second. That was a segue. I didn't even see it happen. That was brilliant.
Wasn't that clean? BP out of Europe, or British Petroleum, Europe, are funding Tea Party candidates who...
Teabaggers
who specifically deny climate change or are pro-drilling the fuck out of the earth for oil.
I would like BP to turn that fire hose of money on me. I want cash over my face, neck and chest. And in exchange for that, I'm going to say, actually, this is a natural cycle, part of the ordinary warming, cooling.
How much would it
take
for you to stand up, go in on breakfast and say, it's all a hoax?
I'd do a better job than that guy from ACT.
But yeah, what is it?
My
like,
argument you know, is too you, powerful to even discuss.
If I gave you $1,000, would you do it?
No, not for $1,000.
So what's 10 grand?
I might think about it for 10. Yeah, I'd think about it for 10.
Right.
But I mean, I wouldn't hold
would
the line.
So afterwards you tweet about it and say, man.
Oh, yeah, for 10 grand, I'd be all over it. For 10 grand, I would then turn the tables on them later. Once the check is cleared, I will then go on the media and probably get a bigger story saying, listen, you remember how I came on and said that was all a natural cycle and there's nothing wrong with the coral? And who needs coral anyway?
A lifetime contract would be more like a couple of hundred grand.
For a lifetime contract, a couple hundred grand. This is BP.
No, I mean, you know, so to keep that quiet for...
To keep that quiet?
To hold the line.
To hold the line?
Until your deathbed.
Well, you know, I have a very high profile in New Zealand, so I'm sure I'm worth at least that much. I mean, I'm no Benedict Gracewood. Morning show.
I'm so glad you're not asking me
technology
this.
Technology commentator.
I would have no idea.
Would you have no idea?
Where my morals would lie.
Everyone knows where your morals lie. They're on your sleeve.
Yeah, true. true.
And they're covered in blood from your heart.
That's the funny thing, is I'd probably think about accepting it, but I wouldn't.
You wouldn't?
No.
Well, if it was enough, I'd do it. I'd absolutely do it.
I think it has
to be. I would sell out. I would sell out like a motherfucker for...
probably tens of millions, I think.
Oh, a single 10 million would... I would sell out for a single 10 million. Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, no question. But multiple tens, that would be even easier for me. I'd save the planet by buying eco bulbs for the whole house every week and then discarding them.
I've been testing this thing.
Mercury? Mercury's good for you, I'm pretty sure.
Speaking of eco bulbs,
mm-hmm.
A guy who's running a
eco bulb in the room there. Nice. Eco bulb in the room over there.
They dim out after pretty quickly, though. They get really dim.
This one's a bit dim now.
But they do make a difference, because I've got this thing from the company. So this is a disclaimer, but I mean, the guy doesn't even know I'm talking about it. But
Kilowatt?
Smartnow.co.nz. Mm-hmm. Beginning to import these things called current cost meters.
Yeah.
You clamp a little ammeter clamp onto your main feed coming into your house.
It's like an induction thing, yeah?
Yeah, an induction thing. And that has a little transmitter that bleeps out the current wattage you're drawing.
Does it work on your Windows Phone 7?
Not yet.
You got a little app?
Not yet, but I will. And then you stick a don't even go there. You stick a little LCD screen and plug that into any router, and what you see on the LCD screen is the current usage for your entire household, and you can then obviously put in what your cost per kilowatt hour is, and then it says, well, therefore, right at this very second, what you're using is going to cost you $X a month.
Wow.
And then you also plug it into the internet, and it uploads to Google Power Meter. So I can have a look at it. And the interesting thing with Google Power Meter is it says it records basically the lowest wattage for the day as well as the peaks. And so it says basically at the lowest you ever got to. And in my house, it's crazy. It's about 400 watts that I'm pulling down at idle, which I think is atrocious.
Wow.
So I haven't even started looking at it, but that means that what I'm going to look into is turning off chargers, turning off, lights and this sort of stuff, and just checking what's on around the house, because I think 400 watts at idle is pretty poor, really.
Now, I'm trying to remember, there was a great site that showed the electricity network in New Zealand. It showed what generation means were being used in different provinces.
Oh, is that Transpower? It's got the graphs, because when you had those
It's got
outages,
the graphs and it's got the map.
Yeah, when you hear those.
What the hell was that site?
I'm pretty sure it's Transpower.
It doesn't matter what it's called, because I've just put it in the show notes.
Yeah.
But it was brilliant. Go and find it in the show notes. I'll say it's this one here. I probably won't remember to do that. Just click every single link. It'll only take you like 3 days to go through them all.
Phishing. What else were we saying?
Oh, tattoo prank.
Nothing quite like a dick on your back.
Oh, there is nothing like it. And if you're an Australian, possibly you deserve it, because I think you're barely a human there, mate.
What happened to this dude?
Dateline Brisbane. Is that correct? I don't know that that's correct. A Queensland
it's early
man,
morning here in Brisbane.
A Queensland man faces criminal charges after allegedly tattooing a 40-centimetre long penis onto his mate's back. He's got to be a real good friend, eh?
It's a big,
mate,
it's
really?
A big sandwich, 40 centimetres.
A big sandwich. I'm not sure how it connects. A big sandwich is a large sandwich.
No, it's a big dick.
It is a big dick.
A big dick.
Those are some big shoes. Police have charged a 21-year-old man from Bundamba near Ipswich with two counts of, do you think that's the correct way of pronouncing it? Bundamba.
Bundamba. I have no idea. Ever since I started calling it Coogie.
Coogie.
Instead of Coogee.
Coogee.
I don't know.
Coogee.
I don't know Sydney places anymore, or Australian places.
Police have charged a 21-year-old man from Bundamba near Ipswich with two counts of assault occasioning bodily harm and one offence relating to the Public Safety Act. What do you think that's about? Unsterilised needles?
Possibly.
Do you think he like pissed the blood off his back or something? He will appear in Ipswich Magistrates Court on November 15. It will cost the 25-year-old alleged victim about $2,000 to remove the lewd tattoo. Alleged victim? Like there's a chance he asked for this thing? Apparently what he asked for was possibly even more hilarious than what he got.
Remember the girl with the stars on it all over her face?
Oh, the one.
And she said she fell asleep. Yeah. He said, why don't you tattoo a 40-centimeter dick on my back? And he was drunk. And now he's saying, no, I asked for what dragons and yin yangs.
What he says he asked for, exactly. A large yin and yang symbol with some dragons, end quote.
and the Japanese word for power.
And the hilarious thing is that someone else was there watching this happen. And let's get this quote. The bloke started doing the tattoo, and there was another bloke standing there watching, saying, "Mate, mate, it's looking really good. It's looking real good." He was told not to go out into the sun and not to show anyone for a few weeks. When he got when he got home, he showed it to the person he lives with, and she said,
"I don't think that's the tattoo you're looking for."
Now, unfortunately, at this stage, we know that there's a 40 centimeter long cock on this guy. But there's also apparently a misspelled slogan implying that the man is.
I want to know what that is.
Implying that the man is gay.
I want to know what the misspelling was.
Fagagot? Moho?
Oh, dear. Poor bastard. I think there's actually maybe a call there for him not to get it repaired, just simply for story value.
Well, I approve of that. I mean, he's going to regret it, whatever it is, eventually. It's on his back. He can't see it. He should just embrace it. He should take it back.
So someone says, "Why have you got a dick on your back?" Well, there's a story about that.
It's life size, mate. Tell you what, haven't had a root in my whole life because my cock's too big. It's driven me into a deep, dark depression. The black dog is a close friend of mine. Can't even get a fleshlight to fit it. Try as I might.
Mm.
So,
It's spurn a rash of copycat crime.
I hope so. Not on me, though.
I'm never going to get a back tattoo ever now.
Not a tramp stamp?
I was planning on it.
I'm thinking of getting just an array of penises all over my lower back, pointing in various directions with squirts and splatters.
And a kind of a Celtic kind of arrangement.
No, Japanese. Japanese style. So like really with lurid
Japanese
colours.
Characters with bukkake in it.
Like an octopus with cock tentacles. like a manga character. Just all over my lower back.
Just sort of tending down towards your anus there.
Towards? Do you think they can tattoo inside? That wouldn't hurt too bad, would it?
It would be horrific.
Oh, do you remember when we spoke on a previous episode about New Zealand's habit of giving things unbelievably obvious names, such as
North Island,
South Island, a hole in the rock, hot water beach.
Yep.
C4, as part of a general kind of repositioning exercise, apparently they are trying to target kind of a slightly more adult market. Now, why would you want to do that? Adults have all the money. Duh. So why did you go after
Youth? No, isn't it TV3 is going more adult and C4 is going more 18 to 35s?
Do you think so? It's 18 to 35. Is that older than they were previously targeting?
No, so
it's always felt quite childish to me.
The way it works, I think, is TV3 is going to be the new TV1.
Yep.
And then C4, what is it called, sorry? The new
Well,
C4?
This is the thing. So now, currently, we have 1, 2, yep. 3, 6, and 7.
So they're going to call C4, it 2 squared?
2 squared? No, they're going to call it 4.
Such original 4. Thinking. Original thinking.
Oh, bro.
It rolls off the tongue.
Doesn't it just?
It rolls off the teeth. I think the theory is that basically you've got TV1 and TV2. So you've got TV1 as higher brow, I think, you know, sort of slightly
That's the theory,
older
is it?
Baby boomers. And TV2 is young bucks. So TV3 will be the TV1 of CanWest.
Who's going to play the dog trials?
Media Works, whatever the hell they're called.
And who's playing the dog trials? That's all I want to see.
Heartland. And then 4 will be the new TV2. So they're going to shift.
They're going to shift DIY. Who wants to be escaping from this island?
Reality show format.
House
X,
swap. Wife
show
swap.
B.
Yeah. Super nanny. Just squash that all down into one channel that you don't
Just
need to watch.
Reality show out.
And we
house.
Can let the idiots watch out.
Yeah, and
I've actually been watching a little bit of The Amazing Race lately.
I love The Amazing Race.
The Amazing Race is purely, incredible. Season 19?
I love it purely for the
it can't be season 19.
The production horror that it must be. I love thinking
Have you been
about,
watching this the newest season?
Yes.
With the, no, with I the lesbian I doctors?
Can't get it.
Who, you know, they say they're friends, but they are the hottest lipstick lesbian.
They have a homosexual couple every series.
Yeah,
so.
the gay boys who I think they had them on as
a cappella group.
Yeah, a cappella group. Who they never said anything about being gay. Maybe they weren't gay with each other, but were just generally gay. Gay all over the world. Yeah. Man, they were out fast because I tell you what, a cappella on TV, get fucked. Keep it in 1930s, son.
Do you think they engineered their exit?
I think they engineered their exit by getting a bunch of mincing little queens on a race.
There's been some pretty high achieving queens on it in the past.
And I'll tell you who's high achieving. One of those lesbian doctors, who I'm going to go on about if you allow me to, is a vegetarian. They present her with the is this spoilers? They present her with this
pig's head.
I think it might have been a sheep's or a goat's head, not a pig's head. She's a vegetarian, digs into it. Coughing and choking, but digs into it, ate the whole thing.
That was a spoiler.
It was a spoiler. Oh, what should I do? What are we going to do about that? Or maybe I'll just, maybe you can just, I mean, come on. It's not just directly into the microphone, is it? Yeah. That's the way we're doing this now. It's a good thing we're encoding at 160 kilobits per second. So we can get, really get that. The maximum, yeah. Make that septum flap.
What were we saying? Oh, yeah, but I love watching The Amazing Race purely because every
people
couple...
quitting?
And every couple has a cameraman and a producer with them. It's and you, incredible. You never, ever, ever, ever,
incredible.
Ever see them.
It's amazing. Absolutely amazing.
Well done. Yeah.
It's brilliant stuff. It's but why
amazing,
is it still
it?
Shot in 4x3 and standard def?
What is up with that?
Seriously.
I thought it was the rippers just being lazy, but...
Nope.
Not that nope. I actually steal this stuff.
Who would? Who would? I don't know what you're talking about.
I just have a big satellite dish.
I've got a C-band satellite. Is that the big one? C-band?
Giant satellite.
Or is it like KU band? Is KU? Is that the big one? Okay, who cares? It's not important. Cough. He's doing some hacking as
he's
we speak.
Hacking and coughing.
So what else are we talking about? I would like to talk about, now, I am a self-professed Windows booster.
Yeah?
Let's call it a booster.
Not quite a fanboy?
I wouldn't say I was a fanboy. Now, most of my friends are all Apple users.
Yeah.
And they probably think I'm a fanboy. But I don't know.
It.
I don't know if that's true.
I just use it. But I also get paid to use it, so that's probably why I love Windows.
Do you?
I get paid to.
I've got an OS 10 machine and I've got a Windows 7 machine.
I like
not that. Here in the studio. I only have a Windows 7 machine, but in the office I've got both. And generally I actually use the Windows 7 machine just because it just suits me better. You know, some people like some people like wearing Birkenstocks and some people like wearing actual shoes.
Yeah.
I don't know where I'm going with that. I don't want to sound like a hater, but OS 10 is shit. It is. OS 10 is objectively shit. And I can make up graphs all day that will prove that in Excel, which apparently, according to Apple users, is the only application you can get for Windows.
I haven't been following. There's a new Mac. There's a MacBook Air out.
And this is what I want to talk
about. Single screen mode or something. Crap. What is that?
I have no idea what you're talking about. You're talking about the curse of Apple, which is that all of their new products have glorious failures when they're new, right. And then they gradually fix them. Apple users conveniently forget that.
Yeah, and they say, oh, no, Microsoft, don't buy a version of my Microsoft product.
Nah, you don't want to buy blah, 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 blah. Yeah, well, it goes both ways. Everyone innovates, and the new versions of anything is going to be more problematic than the older versions. Mm. Now, I like small laptops. Yep. I currently use an Asus E, just a little one.
Yep.
I want something a bit bigger with a high resolution screen. It's the first generation 7-inch. It's got a tiny resolution, 800 by 480. Unusable, really, for the web.
Asus.
Yep.
Mm.
Yep. Really unusable for the web. But as soon as I saw the MacBook Air, they've just released two models. There's a 13-inch and 11-inch screen. They both have an NVIDIA 320. Yeah.
Not bad.
Yeah, they both have like a low voltage Core 2 processor. They both have up to 4 gigs of RAM, and I think they start with 2, and they both have SSD hard drives as
sort of
the only available option.
Flash RAM, yeah.
And they've increased the USB ports to a wonderful and generous 2 now, which is up from the original Air's 1, which I thought was always stupid. And these devices are wonderful.
Mm.
They're really lovely. I mean, they look lovely, and as netbooks go, they've got to be the hottest out there, but they're also by far the most expensive.
But no one wants a netbook.
Who doesn't want a netbook? I want a netbook.
Didn't Steve Jobs say no netbooks are...
Oh, yeah, but he said they were never going to make another PDA, didn't he? When he killed the Newton?
Oh, he says everything he bags something right up until the moment he basically holds it up on stage. Yeah.
One more thing.
Were you recording?
We certainly are recording. Why? Did you think that one more thing was me? Oh, I looked at the recorder.
Yes, you did.
Cough.
Fucking hell. I'm recovering. We should bleep out these coughs.
I don't think so. Now, I was at the movies the other day. Now, this is just a phrase. This is not the word of the week.
Right.
I was at the movies the other day. I watched The Town. This is the Ben Affleck
directed
thing.
I want to see that.
I thought it was actually quite fun.
Mm-hmm. You have to realize that as a parent, the person that I went far behind in my movie will be watching. I haven't
well,
seen
me it. As well. I haven't been watching that many movies lately. You haven't seen Inception?
I haven't seen Inception.
Seriously?
Yes, because it's hard to get a night
out.
Is
it still in theatres?
I don't know. I'm waiting for the screener.
Oh, son. No, there's movies that you've got to see in theatres.
Yeah,
though.
I might have
really.
To try and find
I think you should try and,
mm.
try and do it. Try and do it. Anyway, the town is certainly no Inception. And in fact, funnily enough, this is related to that.
Right.
At the end of the movie, curtains go down. I don't think they have curtains anymore. Whatever happened, the lights didn't even come up, actually. They left us sitting in darkness. Motherfuckers. Event cinemas, man. I don't know. I don't know what's going on with those guys. Who are they? I don't know. So the movie just ends abruptly. I don't know. There was a scream and a gunshot from above us. And we figured that meant that it was over. A light spray of blood went over the audience's head. What is this, smell-o-vision?
It's time to leave.
Does that mean the guy's dead? I don't know. Well, they really wrapped that one up. And as the lights fail to go up, and as everyone prepares to leave, the chaps behind me start talking about how much they liked it, and saying that one's definitely up for an Oscar nod. And then he says, "But Inception bends it up the bum."
What?
Bends it up the bum. I've never heard that phrase before. And then he said,
"Hang on. I need some ground here. Are these bogans or
no?
Shore boys
look like you." Look like you, but less hair.
Bends it up the bum.
Bends it up the bum. And then he said, oh, maybe not bends. It's something else, is it up the bum?
That's bizarre.
I think it's a glorious phrase.
Bloody hell.
Your cough is bending the podcast up the bum. Maybe not bends. So something's happening in Italy.
In Italy? No, something's not happening.
Did you see that? That was not a segue. That was just a right turn.
In Italy, not a segue. That's okay. Something's not happening in Italy, and what is not happening is people are not going to be wearing miniskirts and other revealing clothing.
But I like to wear a miniskirt in summer. It's so liberating and freeing.
No, apparently, Seaside Italy is going to ban miniskirts and other revealing clothing to improve what the mayor calls standards of public decency.
Seaside Italy?
Seaside.
Is that a town in Italy? That doesn't sound like an Italian name.
Also a ban on sunbathing and playing football in public
places. That's not the name. The name of the town is probably something like Quattro Stagioni Italy. Is it Naples?
Well, the mayor is Luigi.
Luigi.
Luigi Bobbio. Bobbio. The town of Castellammare di Stabia in southern Italy.
Right. I think that mayor, is he sour-faced? Does he look like he's been eating lemons?
There's no picture of him, but the opposition Democratic Party has held a miniskirt day rally, which I could...
I am strongly behind them, and I would be there with my miniskirt that I don't currently own, but would acquire for the purposes.
I'd wear a miniskirt to that. Last story. You're going to question me on the Encyclopedia Urban Dictionary Word of the Week.
Yes.
Which, you're unfairly questioning me on every week.
Yep.
So I've got a question for you instead. Listeners, you can play along. When did Sony stop making... cassette Walkman?
When did they start making the mini-disc? Not the mini-disc, the Discman. About 1994 or 1995 or something.
So when was the last?
And the mini-disc was when? It was pretty similar period.
Yeah, probably.
The iPod, the first iPod came out in, 2000, 2001, something like that?
Ages gone, and they've been producing MP3 Walkman for ages too.
Sony. And I mean, my Sony phone, my wonderful Sony phone that you think is a piece of shit.
Yes.
That's a... I think it might even be...
a few years old. It can play MP3s.
Does it even say? I thought it said something about 7, being a fucking Walkman phone, but it doesn't.
Mm.
It certainly is a Sony audio recorder. So I'm going to say that they stopped making the Walkman. And I mean, that's a normal size cassette. It's been hard to get them.
Yeah,
I'd say probably a while after the Discman... A while after the mini disc, let's call it 1990. Let's call it 1999.
How's April?
April 1999.
April this year.
No, surely
they,
not.
They shipped the last shipment to retailers in April this year, and they just announced that now they're no longer making or selling cassette Walkmen.
Who is buying Walkmen?
I bet they're just going to retailers, sitting on the shelf for 6 months, and then going to the trash.
That's nuts.
Or would it? There's probably
those weird fetishists who have like 400 pairs of sneakers.
There's also small villages in Mongolia.
No, surely not, because they're the biggest power user of any of the portable audio devices.
But they don't have any internets out there, do they?
Yeah, but so what? They've got to get media delivered to them, physical media delivered to them. Wouldn't it be better
on cassettes
to give them a
A flash drive.
A burnt CD, even. A flash drive, ideally, which has, you know, so many tapes worth of
music.
No,
apparently not. Whatever. Well, I mean, I don't know where they were selling them, but they were still selling them.
Old ladies. Old ladies who didn't
need to... Do you remember getting the what was it, APSS?
I don't know what you're talking about.
You're on your Walkman where you could fast forward and it would automatically stop between tracks.
Oh, I do remember that.
Hot.
Yes. Beautiful.
I don't like this track. I'm just going to wait another 45 seconds for it to fast forward.
45 seconds is better than 3.5 minutes.
Can I spare the battery power?
Man, constantly worrying about the batteries.
Fast forward would churn the batteries. I used to have my yellow sports Walkman.
Yep.
On my paper rounds.
Was it water resistant or waterproof?
Waterproof. It was one of the ones with a big clip on it that went ka-chunk when it closed it.
Yep.
You could basically just go underwater with it.
Yep.
Yeah. Lovely. And I listened to who are those white parody rap guys? With a stutter rap.
Old guys with new socks.
Perhaps. Don't know.
It was stutter rap. Yeah. Parody rappers.
You're going to have to look this up and put it in the show because it's
stutter
fucking
rap.
Brilliant, yeah.
Ah, I'd like the sound of that, actually, stutter rap. I could get behind that. This is Googling for parody rap. You're on a hiding for nothing. You're going to get 25 million results.
And they're all weird Al Yankovic.
No doubt.
No, okay. Sure, next story?
White and nerdy. Well, the next story. What's the next story? I think that the next story is actually... the latest and a new ongoing segment called Morgan's Corrections. Now, both of these are to do with numbers. Now, you remember that last episode I corrected the amount of tramway track.
Yes,
I said 76 kilometres and I was off by 72. Incredible network. I hope everyone's looked at the map by now because it was amazing in 1950. We spoke about Mrs. Havisham's Great Expectations cake.
Yes.
And I said four lovely ladies and then reeled off five names.
I heard that at the time, actually. I kept quiet because I thought it was hilarious.
But now this is the more incredible one. Now, I spoke about the cube of gold 20 meters on a side. Yes. And you were like, no fucking way is that possible. You're out of your mind. Well, it wasn't right. It actually wasn't correct, but not by much. Mm. It's a cube 25 meters on each side.
Now, I'll say two things to that. 25 metres on a side is still a small cube.
It is.
But
well,
it's a fuckload
I wouldn't
bigger.
Want to try and lift it.
There is a fuckload more gold in 25 square metre cube than there is in a 20 square metre cube. A hell of a lot more. There's approximately five times five times
you
five.
You could fit all of Mother Teresa's doubt in a 25 cubic metre
yes.
area.
Yeah. It's a lot more than...
Yeah, but it's a lot more, but it's still a hell of a lot less than you would have expected.
It's still a small cube.
And I looked it up. I can't remember the number, but the platinum cube, I think, may have even been slightly smaller than I said.
And I have a minor correction to make.
Yes.
We did make light of the Nazis and the Japanese.
Yeah, we didn't really talk about the Nazis.
No, but we talked about them being bad.
We talked about the Japanese being badly behaved in the war, and they were. They did, after all, start it. They did go and invade all of Asia. On a long conquest throughout all of Southeast Asia,
but we did
murdering, pillaging, and raping on their way.
That's true, but we did skip various fire bombings on behalf of the Allies and
when did that happen? Was that after they started the war, or was it before they started the war?
I don't know, mate. I'm so bad at
I'll give you a hint. It was after they started the war.
All I know is
Japan started it.
Archie Duke and he shot an ostrich.
I would say you were talking about World War One there.
And ripping off Blackhead at the same time. Yeah. But yeah, we didn't really mention dam bustings and maybe the odd nuclear bomb. So
I think now the thing about the firebombs, people don't understand how catastrophic that was for Japan. The firebombs killed more than the nuclear bombs ever did.
Yeah.
The firebombs were over every major city, every major population area. And because their cities were paper and wood, they were just decimated. Decimated, for our listeners who haven't already heard this interesting fact, decimated means reducing the population by a tenth.
A decimal, yeah.
But some of their cities were reduced by, they were septimated.
Horrible.
Is that the right sept? Sept, is that seven? They're like literally reduced by 70% by these fire bombings.
War sucks.
War. That's the message to get out of this. War sucks.
Yeah,
don't do war.
Doesn't matter
don't
what side
do
you're
war.
On.
Yeah. And you fucking pisshead, pussy, coward war hawks who criticise the Labour government for getting rid of our amazing fighter jet fleet. I mean, the Skyhawks, number one, they were a joke.
Yeah, they were a joke. But I tell you what,
Number two, we are not going to be effective in an air battle.
No.
And it is better for us to take the moral high ground and get out of war.
It is quite interesting, isn't it? Because, I mean, I watch a lot of Discovery Channel and there's bloody...
war machines!
Yeah, war machines.
War machines!
Guns of the 20th century and this sort of
built-in blood cutters, rotating blades, and a disemboweling attachment on the front. Flamethrowers and pile drivers.
And I play Battlefield and all this sort of stuff. But then again, you know, I think maybe...
No one gets killed.
No, and it is a balance. Maybe every now and then you should watch a video from a Apache chopper or... Or, you know, imagine that missile and that cool Skyhawk going into your family's house.
For many people, they don't need to imagine it. For many people, they have lived it and died it. And for many people who have survived it, their lives will never be the same. And
on that depressing note.
That is a depressing note. Because fuck war. War is the worst thing that we do. And we do it all the time and we'll never learn. And we have to. We have to stop.
That's a very, very good point.
This is not a comedy podcast.
It's not.
Sometimes I would like it to be more of, but I can't make jokes about this, though. This is serious. And we have ridiculous wars of aggression going on.
I mean, I think I came back to Mark's comment about why can you get away with things in comedy. You know, we started off without kamikaze pilots wearing helmets. I just wanted to make sure that, yes, we actually do understand that sometimes that's horrific.
Yeah. No need for any clever segues. I think that with something like that, you know, We recognize it, we acknowledge it, and then we move to the next thing.
I have
no new projects. Discourse is taking up a lot of my time. Compiling show notes for days on end.
They are good show notes, though.
Are they good? Or are they obsessive?
No, they're fantastic.
I mean, last week's show notes filled out something like 3 pages.
I say carry on.
And I cut some of them. I mean, that wasn't even the complete list.
You can put a reference into each cough in the show notes.
I am not going to. This week's show notes will not be as comprehensive as last week's. No, but, fine. I mean, I guess we haven't covered quite as much stuff in some respects. Time for the Discourse Weekly Show Urban Dictionary Word of the Week. The word of the week. The word for episode 3 is Big Soft. Big Soft.
Now, see, you're trying to twist me around. Because
I am trying to twist you around.
Big Sandwich last week was not a sexual position.
It wasn't a sexual position. Let's remember the first episode. It was Vatican Roulette, which was the rhythm method of contraception, allegedly contraception.
We had Big Sandwich.
We had Big Sandwich, which was a larger than normal sandwich.
Larger than normal sandwich.
So and this week soft. We have Big Soft.
Big Soft is... I don't know. It's a large software company.
Believe it or not, that's exactly what Thomas said. I asked Thomas Scovell if he could come up with a definition as well.
I didn't hear his answer.
You didn't hear his answer, but let's play it for the listeners now.
Discourse. Big Soft. Let me say, if I were to think about that, I would say Big Soft would surely be something completely not sexual, because that would be far too easy.
Yeah.
So I imagine Big Soft would surely refer to something along the lines of the larger tech companies, the likes of Microsoft.
Yeah, absolutely not.
Good.
It's completely sexual.
Discourse.
You know when you have, maybe you just woke up and you've got morning wood, you take a piss, and then your erection stops being hard but is still large, but it is now a large soft cock. That is a big soft.
See, I always thought that was called a halfie.
Well, it probably is called a halfie as well, and it might even be on Urban Dictionary. But halfie is not this week's Discourse big Weekly soft. Show. Urban Dictionary, word of the week. Okay, we are in iTunes. It looks like we've got quite a few people already subscribing, and by quite a few, I mean 7.
So the thing with iTunes, as I understand, is the popularity of a podcast is rated by the number of new subscribers over a period of time.
Yep.
So if you could do us one huge solid, it would be to... While Morgan undoes his belt.
Yeah, I'm not letting out the big soft.
preparing for this what you're doing for us, would be to subscribe on iTunes regardless of whether you use iTunes or not. Even if perhaps you were to download iTunes, subscribe to Discourse, and then uninstall iTunes.
You could do that. Or you could keep iTunes installed purely for the purposes of unsubscribing and resubscribing regularly.
Not that we condone.
Because you'll be helping us out.
No, we
I'm
do condone
sure how.
Fuck it. We condone.
I condone that.
Spamming.
What's the cost? What's the cost? There's no cost.
No.
A little bit of time. Spend some time.
It's
look at the time we spent. We built this amazing thing for you.
Yeah. So if you could subscribe on iTunes, that'd be lovely. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the show. Check the site for the show notes. Email comments to comments@discourse.co.nz.
Or hit the TalkBack page.
Send us questions. Send us comments.
Yep, like Morgan said. Even send us an MP3 file of your dulcet tones.
An MP3 file. Do you remember how great it was when we got that one from Mark?
It was brilliant.
We played it. We talked about it. We've referred to him several times. You too could have fame like this. Send in an MP3 file and we will make you a star.
You'll be a star. Yeah.
Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
You're listening to the weekly show on with course.
Right, we're using that one.